The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is a man with the best first name in all of organized radio and television, Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Welcome, Yancey.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
So let me ask you this, Yancey. We just had a great storm that went over Long Island and my old home of Fire Island. What were the repercussions? Did you get walloped hard, or are you able to say, well, it missed us again?
Well, where I lived, it, you're able to say it just missed us again. A lot of rain during Ida, a lot of rain during this week, but nothing like the damage and, even death that we saw with the hurricane downstate last week.
And do you have anything to say about Fire Island survival? Very important to me.
Well, I'm glad it survived, and I'm glad for you. Yes. No, look, I mean, in all seriousness, look, these have been some serious storms, either down south or up north. People lost their lives.
Yeah,
and
terrible.
It is terrible, and it goes along with the trend that we've seen now for years with storms getting more frequent, more deadly, and all in all more concerning for everyone.
Does that affect the politics of Long Island? In other words, preparation is everything. If you're there when something bad happens, sometimes you take the blame. Do you have an assessment of that?
Not immediately right now, but you're right in general. Look, there's a couple of things. Long Island it has been hit by big storms before. Of course, Sandy, we all remember, in 2012. And Long Island has always had a lot of problems with the electrical grid. It's run by the Long Island Power Authority. It's always been a political lightning rod. There's questions about whether to make it a true public utility or keep it as a operated by the LIPA board, but run by a real electrical company. That's always fodder for politics down there. There's some bills floating around. They've got some bipartisan support on Long Island, which would convert LIPA into a full-fledged utility. But there's also opposition to that, wondering if it would really work, and wondering if it would be any better as a public utility rather than a private operator now. So, I mean, there's always power grid politics. I think that's the nature of the island and the nature of infrastructure issues, which are always big because of the physical setting down there, whether it's power grids or highways or mass transit. It's just a big part of life.
So how is drinking water on Long Island? And water, I remember in the old days, people were using so much detergent in their houses that they were told not to do it anymore.
And there's always been an issue of protecting the groundwater on Long Island. And nitrogen and other chemicals and elements that and concern for keeping the drinking water safe. One of the big projects that former Governor Cuomo had pushed through was to get money to redo a lot of septic systems, which are a huge issue in terms of keeping the Long Island aquifer clean. I think coming up in the future, you're going to have questions about an Environmental Bond Act, which a lot of groups favor to basically borrow a lot of money to do some long-term infrastructure projects. And a lot of those on Long Island would be for water protection. And part of the reason why that's popular is not only do folks see it as necessary, but protecting groundwater is something that almost always gets bipartisan support. Republicans and Democrats support it. It's one issue where Republicans who might be opposed to a lot of other environmental laws or regulations are usually on board when it comes to protecting the aquifer.
Okay, Yancey Roy, let's go right to ex-Governor Cuomo. It's as if he's just disappeared. People thought he might want to run again, that he might come into a primary, but he's gone. What do you make of all that?
You know, the interesting thing is it's only been, as we speak here today, what, a little more than 2 weeks, two plus weeks,
it's
getting
amazing.
Close to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's been longer. A couple of things on this. It's like Kathy Hochul, who's now the New York governor, has just been on the job less than 20 days. And you're hearing people say, what about this or what about that? Has she done anything for this or that? And sometimes I find myself thinking, well, we kind of do have to like realize it's been not even 3 weeks, and you got to, whatever the new administration is, you've got to give them time to kind of get their sea legs, get some people in place and start doing things. And on the same note, you ask about Governor Cuomo. I think that, you know, it has been less than 3 weeks since the sort of, resigning in disgrace is a way to put it. He left office in the wake of sexual harassment allegations and other issues that were being investigated. I got to imagine he will lay low for a while. I don't imagine, you know, you'll see him out and about. I also have to imagine that there's probably some concern about, you know, not wanting to be photographed out and about. So I'm not surprised that you're not seeing him right now. Now, what happens months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now, I don't know. But it's not surprising that you're not seeing him at this point.
And what residuals are there? For example, a number of good government groups have filed a complaint with the New York State Board of Elections against former Governor Cuomo for using campaign funds to pay for a spokesperson, who happens to be a former student of mine, Rich Azzapardi, Common Cause, Reinvent Albany, the League of Women Voters of New York State, New York Public Interest Research Group are taking issue with a Democrat using some of his $18 million in campaign funds to pay for Azzapardi. The group say it's a violation of state election law. What do you think?
Well, you know, the larger context about campaign finance laws and what a politician can do with them in New York is, think of it this way, if the sentence begins with, can you use your campaign finance funds to ... fill in the blank, the answer is generally yes. There's almost nothing you can't do with your campaign money short of outright depositing it into your own personal bank account. I've been covering this for years, and other reporters have too. There's always stories that pop up. There's state legislators that use campaign funds to lease cars, which ostensibly is for campaigning, but it also kind of benefits you in that, hey, you don't have to buy your own car. You got your campaign paying for a car. Remember way back when, you might remember this doozy of a story, where late Senator Joe Bruno used campaign money to put in a swimming pool at, like a Republican clubhouse or headquarters locally. They can use money to buy a 12 bottles of wine and send it to some local not-for-profit, which, you know, provides them goodwill with the nonprofit and is paid for by the campaign fund. That's one of the bigger problems with the campaign laws, is there's very little restrictions on what constitutes use for campaign purposes. So, you know, I know that they're raising complaints about the governor's $18 million in the bank and what he may or may not do with it. But like I said, short of outright just putting the money in your own personal account, there's not many real restrictions.
Yes. So when we look at the legislature raised its mighty voice in getting Cuomo out of there. But I just wrote a column in which I truly believe they have always had a certain, well, what's a better word, stink to them, some of which you've just talked about. You know, so they went after him with everything they had with Cuomo, and maybe that was deserved. But there is a real question, is there any chance that we will see some ethical reform of the kind you were just talking about?
Well, you know, it's always been an issue that gets talked about in the press and And we might see something with the ethics board. We'll get to that in a second. But, you know, one of the reasons I think that that there hasn't been like a real overhaul or structural change on some of these issues is, as much as they are talked about in the press, they don't really, that issue doesn't really move elections or the electorate all that much. And so I think it's down the lower list of concerns for politicians. So that's one reason why there's not quite an urgency. That said, one of the ethics related issues that dogged Governor Cuomo's entire time there was the commission that he helped create, which was the Joint Commission on Public Ethics, often referred to as JCOPE.
Or JJOPE.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Which was seen as too tied to him, run by people close to him, and never really an impartial arbiter of matters. So there's going to be a push from legislators to either junk it, redo it, come up with something new. The problem is that it's always been a problem for them to come up with something that is truly independent and that doesn't have ties to some of the politicians. I mean, you go way back to Elliot Spitzer, who was going to clean up Albany. He wanted to redo the commission, ethics commission, and what he proposed ended up with a lot of his appointees on the board too. So there's always a lot of talk. We'll have to see if anything actually comes of it, but I do know there is a lot of desire to at least do something about the Ethics Commission, maybe in the coming year when they come back to Albany for the 22 session.
Okay, Yancey Roy, let's talk about Governor Hochul and how she's doing. Let's see how to phrase this question. How's she doing?
Wow, that was perfectly put. Well, listen, you know what? She hit the ground running with some immediate concerns, all right? One of her first, less than a week in office, she had to address what was the eviction moratorium and the expiration of that with people who couldn't pay their rent because of the pandemic and extending that program. So she was immediately had that. She also immediately had the storms that we referenced earlier. And she's also had to immediately jump on the issue of schools reopening amid COVID and what to do about masks. So in a way, the good news for her is there were some issues right there on the table that needed to be addressed by a governor. You could show a governor in action, taking action, whether it was signing bills, talking about mask mandates, or doing stuff to help storm recovery. You know, she got to meet with President Joe Biden in New York City just a few days ago. I mean, that's always a great photo op for a governor of any state, of any stripe, to be seen in action after a natural disaster, especially with the president. So she's had a lot of things to boost her profile and show her in action and show her getting things done. The question now will be what happens after this initial flurry. There's a fallow period in terms of legislation before the legislature comes back and you have to start working on a budget. How do you fill the time in between there, either getting your initiatives off the ground and, frankly, also building your profile for next year's election?
Okay, and I'm glad you brought us there, Yancey Roy, because she immediately takes office when Cuomo is forced out, and she says she's going to run for a separate term. And there are pundits who are saying not so fast. For example, the very able Attorney General of the state of New York, Tish James, who is, of course, black. And obviously what happened here is that Governor Hochul named a lieutenant governor who is also African-American. But in the end, if Tish James takes her on in a primary, there's a very good chance that Tish James is going to win. At least I think so.
You've got a lot of positioning that's going to be going on in the next few months before January. First thing about Hochul announcing right off the bat she's running for election next year. And frankly, from a political strategy point of view, she had to do that. I mean, you can't walk into office and leave any kind of speculation that you're going to be a lame duck. I mean, that hurts you on a number of levels. First of all, getting anything passed in terms of what you would think would be an agenda. And second, you can't, you know, let any potential rivals sort of jump in ahead of you. So, I mean, that's just smart planning for Hochul to go out and say immediately, yes, I'm running. Now, looking ahead at the calendar, New York's primaries now are in June, moved up from September from years and years and years ago. That means the conventions will have to be held in February. They haven't been announced yet, but that's when they'll be. So if conventions are in February, anybody who's interested in running probably has to announce or make some sort of statement or movements or whatever before then, which means probably before the end of the year. So the thing to keep an eye on is from now to the end of the year, and right now we're still in September, so it's probably too early for anybody else. But before the end of the year, who else formally jumps in? And the names that have been out there are, of course, Letitia James, the Attorney General. Also, Steve Ballone, the Suffolk County Executive. Tom Suozzi, the Long Island Democratic Representative. Bill de Blasio, people are talking about whether he would jump in, or Jumaane Williams. You know, there's going to be, in a few weeks coming up, there's going to be a gathering of the New York State Association of Counties, which is largely kind of an upstate-driven group of county executives. And I'm wondering who might go to address them, to address their members, and whether that would be any kind of signal. Let's speculate for a second. If Bill de Blasio, who is leaving as mayor of New York City, decides to go and address the Association of Counties, well, I mean, you know, why else would he do that unless he was really thinking of a gubernatorial run? So there's going to be some interesting things to watch like that, if something like that happens over the next few weeks.
Of course, Bill de Blasio did not do well as mayor. People didn't like him, and we know that from the polling and everything. What makes him think he can run for governor?
Well, I can't answer for him, but I guess if a bunch of people get into this race, and now you've got, let's just for the fun of it, say you got 3, 4, 5 people, then whoever's running has to start figuring that all I need to win in such a crowded field is 30% or so. And how do I get 30%? And if you're New York City based, if you think you can get that amount of percentage from the city, then maybe you have a shot. So the pathways to victory are going to depend a lot on how many candidates are in the field. You know, and then whether you need 30% to win, or whether you need well over 40 or 50% to win.
How important is the woman thing here? Now, we have obviously Letitia James, who you've named, who's been an excellent attorney general. You have Kathy Hochul, you know, some people think is doing a competent job, but not, hasn't been called inspirational by anybody I know in her speeches and her public outings. And that's two very important women in New York State. And then you have all the people you raised. How important is the very fact of being a woman, do you think, in this coming primary that you're talking about?
Again, I think it's going to depend on how the field sorts itself out, right? If again, for the sake of discussion, let's say the two candidates are Kathy Hochul and Letitia James, well, and nobody else, well, then that kind of, that issue might be off the table, wouldn't it? But then if, say, if you have 3 or 4 other candidates, it would be a factor, but there'd be also other factors, geographic factors, constituency factors, upstate, downstate, suburban, urban, progressive versus moderate. There would, all of a sudden, if in a crowded field, you'd have half a dozen major factors that could all be influential.
So it'll be fascinating to see what happens. All eyes will be on Letitia James, obviously. She comes from the city, she's of color, and she has a natural advantage. She doesn't come from, you know, upstate Buffalo region, Niagara, Erie region. So are there any tea leaves that are showing in that department at all?
Not at this moment. I think there's a lot of people who think she might run. There's some people who definitely would want her to run. You know, I think that, again, here we are less than 20 days into the Hochul administration. So making any sort of move would probably be seen as bad form right now. But, you know, it also brings up another kind of interesting issue. If you don't count Kathy Hochul or David Paterson, who both became governors because of resignations, then the last two governors that won an open election both came from the Attorney General's office, Eliot Spitzer and Andrew Cuomo. And is New York sort of got a, I don't know, predilection, precedent, or whatever you want to call it, for, you know, Attorney General stepping up to the governor's office when the opportunity arises?
Now, obviously, this is a program on state politics. We have a legislature who did everything but literally throw Andrew Cuomo out of office. And I guess I'm after you, Yancey, as a real expert in this. Do you think that the legislature is getting along with Hochul better than one could have expected? It sounds to me like Hochul is really kissing the feet of the legislature.
Well, there's a bunch of different factors at play. One is the relations between Cuomo and the legislature were bad, and they had been bad the last few years. So in that sense, anyone who comes in and changes that dynamic, the relationship's going to be better. Kathy Hochul is also, as part of her strategy of taking office and succeeding in office, is to say, I'm not going to be Andrew Cuomo. And that entails a lot of things. And one of those is getting along with the legislature. So I think you've seen a lot of outreach there. She's also said she doesn't want to do top down, for example, the issue of whether counties will run vaccine sites or whatever. She says she wants to work with them and not be top down. So you've got that. But then there's an other greater sort of context going on here, which is for the imperial governorship. You know, for years, New York had a divided legislature. Republicans controlled the Senate, Democrats the Assembly. And you always had a governor, whether it was a Republican or Democrat, who could be kind of in the middle and therefore have the most leverage and position himself. And the battles were Republican versus Democrat, depending on who was in the executive office. But what you've got now is you've got a legislature that's now unified and much more emboldened. It's democratically controlled in both houses and overwhelmingly Democratic. The last two elections have solidified that. And the Republicans, as of right now, don't have much of a chance of taking over a majority in either house. And so starting really in 2019 and continuing now, the dynamic is shifting. Instead of Republican versus Democrat, it's a little bit more like legislature versus governor. And the tension is not quite political party, but now more institutional in a way. And the legislature trying to flex its muscles and have more say over policy. That said, New York has a constitutional structure that always makes the governor the most powerful official in the state, always has the most power over the budget, is always going to get his or her way over a lot of the budget and other policies. But that said, you're seeing a different kind of tension and the different power in the legislature. And maybe because of that, you know, and because she's so new, Kathy Hochul certainly wants to have a more cooperative relationship with the legislature than we saw Governor Cuomo have.
One last question before we have to leave. And it's always such a pleasure to have you on the program because you know so much. But you wrote a story called The Long Fight for Healthcare, Compensation for 9/11 First Responders a Day Ago. What came out of that story that is important that people know?
I think what came out of it was that it was an incredibly long slog for the New York delegation, and they narrowly missed winning any money for health care for first responders on many occasions, and that it took a lot of bipartisan effort and some close calls, some votes where you know, they had to call people back in December where they were all trying to leave for Christmas. And, you know, one instance, Chuck Schumer having to sit down one-on-one with Senator Coburn of Oklahoma to persuade him to make a deal. There's just a lot of interesting steps there. Basically, 99 things had to go right for them to get the aid. Any of them could have gone wrong, but they all fell into place. And, you know, the Zadroga Act and the billions in aid is now law.
Yancey Roy, I wish this program was an hour long because, you know so much, and it's always a look behind closed doors that makes it so fascinating to me. We're out of time. Our guest has been Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Yancey, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Alan.